KPFK, because it's people power KPFK.
This is Michelle Schacht, and you're listening to Radio Powered by the People, KPFK. 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara.
Cut to the Chase airs every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Join us as we dialogue with activists.
They were given a pledge.
Historians, musicians, poets, and you, the listener. Not only analyzing our current situation, but coming up with solutions.
What is your strategy to win?
Street Sankofa, take this music.
Analysis and solutions. And what did we talk about?
Survival skills in 2026 and beyond.
9/11, there were people in the Pentagon that was glad that it happened.
Redefining local police departments.
And while going through certain parts of Los Angeles, I actually saw this with my own eyes. Police passing out red devils.
Reparations, colorism, and much more. Cut to the Chase every Friday at 8 a.m.
Listening to 94.1 KPFA, 89.3.
Good evening. It's Thursday, July 23rd. This is the Pacifica Evening News. I'm Mitch Jezerich. The United States and Iran exchange attacks for the 13th consecutive day after the collapse of a tentative peace agreement.
So there's nothing that he's saying right now that any of us can take seriously. And that's unfortunate because he's gotten us involved in a war and has now cost the lives of 18 brave service members in Iran.
The House of Representatives approves a war powers resolution, but hours later it fails in the Senate.
The yeas are 214, the nays are 208. The concurrent resolution is adopted, and without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table.
Immigrant rights activists continue to denounce detainment facility conditions.
So unedible that I literally could not stomach it. I lost 70 pounds.
And an Oakland woman is arrested by ICE while boarding flight in Denver.
ICE is here! Help us! Help us!
These stories and more are coming up. From the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, this is the Pacifica Evening News. I am Mitch Jezerich. The price of oil today hit $100 a barrel for the first time since May in response to Houthi rebels in Yemen claiming to have struck Saudi tankers in the Red Sea. It's the first attack against Saudi ships since the group announced its blockade earlier in the week. Oil is now at its highest price since Iran and the United States reached a preliminary peace agreement last month that has since collapsed. The strikes were announced by Houthi military spokesperson Yahya Sari. Since the Strait of Hormuz has been shut down in exporting oil to the world due to the United States and Israel's war against Iran, Saudi Arabia, a key U.S. ally, has redirected oil shipments through the Red Sea to the Gulf of Aden. Around 12% of the world's trade, including a fourth of global container traffic, passes through there, moving between Europe and Asia via Egypt's Suez Canal. Yahya Sari said the attacks will continue as long as Saudi ships try to pass.
The Yemeni armed forces carried out a special military operation targeting two Saudi oil tankers that had violated the blockade decisions issued by the armed forces in the Red Sea. One vessel was named Ensalia and the other Layla. The operation was conducted using several ballistic missiles, cruise missiles, and drones. By God's grace and assistance, the strikes were accurate and resulted in major fires breaking out on both vessels. In the same context, the Yemeni armed forces stated that they forced nearly 10 ships to turn back and return.
The Yemeni armed forces will continue their naval operations against the Saudi enemy, and it continues to impose the equation of siege by siege and confirms the Saudi enemies that if there is any stupidity targeting our country, it will be faced with major operations in the depths of its lands.
In response, U.S. President Donald Trump is threatening to widen the war with Iran to include the Houthis. He wrote on Truth Social that, quote, if they do this again, the U.S. will hold Iran responsible, and that the Houthis are a surrogate and or proxy of Iran, and major military punishment will be inflicted upon Iran and, of course, the Houthis themselves, end quote. UN General Secretary Antonio Guterres warned Thursday that the region is being pulled into an ever-widening circle of confrontation, with one crisis feeding another and every escalation triggering the next. A new wave of U.S. strikes hit sites across Iran today, killing at least two people and targeting additional civilian and energy infrastructure. Iran has retaliated against neighboring countries hosting U.S. military bases. After nearly 2 weeks of renewed fighting, escalating attacks are raising fears of a wider war. Lauren Schmidt reports.
U.S. Central Command announced its latest strikes began at 3:45 p.m. this Thursday, marking the 13th consecutive night of operations against Iran. Jordan, Bahrain, Kuwait have reported retaliatory Iranian missile and drone strikes following days of sustained U.S. attacks. Donald Trump is renewing threats and says he is considering what he called a massive attack on Iran, one, quote, bigger than ever before, close quote, and that he was close to making a decision. On Wednesday, Donald Trump threatened to bomb bridges and power plants each time Tehran targeted a ship in the Strait of Hormuz, despite civilian infrastructure being protected under international humanitarian law. But Secretary of State Marco Rubio said Trump is taking a hardline approach.
The president's policy is a head for an eye. I mean, honestly, that's what it's going to be. I mean, they will pay a very heavy price for the things they're doing. They're already paying a very heavy price. You guys don't know it because you don't cover it. You're not in Iran. You're not in the street. They don't have a free media. But they're going to continue to pay a very heavy price.
An advisor to Iran's supreme leader said Trump's threats to strike civilian infrastructure are a sign of desperation as Tehran continues to absorb U.S. attacks and retaliate against Gulf countries. Mohsen Rezaei, a senior officer in Iran's Revolutionary Guard and advisor to the supreme leader, wrote on X, quote, the delusional president of the United States has gone from the madman game to the desperate man game with his deadly mistakes, close quote. Rezaei warned that Iran's response to attacks on its infrastructure would be, quote, escalating and severe, close quote. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned that, quote, an alarming disregard for international law is worsening the crisis across the Middle East, a sentiment echoed by UN spokesperson Stefan Dujarric.
The humanitarian consequences of the latest escalation, including in and around Bab al-Mandab Strait and the Strait of Hormuz, are continuing to grow. The escalation threatens to further disrupt maritime trade, flights, border crossings, and regional supply chains on which millions of people rely on. Any further disruption could drive up humanitarian needs and costs at a time when aid operations are already underfunded and already overstretched.
Iran's health ministry reported Wednesday that U.S. airstrikes in the last month have killed at least 53 people and wounded nearly 600 others. Those killed include 6 women and 3 children, adding to the war's mounting civilian death toll, which currently stands at 1,700 since the war began, although the toll is likely higher following the near 2 weeks of renewed U.S. strikes. Meanwhile, President Trump downplayed the American death toll as the United States conducted its third dignified transfer of fallen service members.
One is too many, but it's 18, whereas in Vietnam we lost 200,000, we lost thousands and thousands, in Afghanistan we lost thousands in every war, the Korean War, thousands, and these wars all lasted for years, and we want to get it over with.
The Trump administration has sent mixed messages about the war. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and President Trump have both claimed victory in Iran, despite the fighting reigniting. Hegseth testified this week before the Senate Appropriations Committee, where Democrats challenged him over earlier claims that the war had been won.
On day 14 of this conflict, Mr. Secretary, day 14, nearly 5 months ago, you stated that Iran's military had been, quote, destroyed and, quote, made combat ineffective. That was on day 14 of the war. Was that an accurate statement?
They didn't have a navy any longer. It's completely sunk. Their missiles were buried underneath a lot of their underground facilities, and their defense industrial base has been almost completely destroyed. So as far as a military assessment of Iran's capabilities, it didn't mean by any stretch of the imagination absolute zero, but they're
close to the lowest level. You stated that on day 14 of this conflict, in the second week of the conflict, you stated that Iran's military had been, quote, destroyed and, quote, made combat ineffective. Was that an accurate statement? Yes or no?
Georgia Democratic Senator John Ossoff was unable to get a yes or no answer from Hegseth, despite using all of his allotted time during the exchange. However, President Trump today acknowledged that Iran's military still has significant capabilities.
They have known nothing other than they're mean and they're smart and they still have some capability. But 4 months ago, trust me, they were much stronger, okay? I want to give you the non-fake news.
In a seemingly tone-deaf remark, President Trump insisted,
"We're doing extremely well."
Even as the ceasefire collapsed and fighting has intensified, and insisted that the United States does not need Iran's oil.
In fact, if you combine us and Venezuela, we have about 62% of the world's oil market. So we don't need straits. We don't need anything. We don't need the Hormuz Strait, but we do it because we have to do it.
Continued U.S. airstrikes are taking place even as diplomatic efforts show little public sign of progress. Officials on both sides remain divided over the Strait of Hormuz, the crucial route for global energy shipments. The unpopular war threatens further economic disruption worldwide and is driving up fuel prices ahead of this fall's U.S. midterms. House Democratic Leader Hakeem Jeffries says Democrats will make the war and its economic consequences a central campaign issue.
The verdict is clear. Donald Trump and House Republicans have failed the American people.
As fears of a wider regional war grow, Donald Trump told Axios he is considering restarting major combat operations against Iran, including strikes larger than those carried out during Operation Epic Fury. His escalating threats against civilian infrastructure are also raising concerns about a president saying what used to be the quiet part out loud, a blatant disregard for international humanitarian law. For KPFA News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
The Iranian president's office has mocked comments by U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio and threatened to escalate the war on Tehran's terms. Abbas Mousavi wrote in a post on X, quote, "Soon it won't be an eye for an eye or a head for an eye, but your whole damn body for an eye. This isn't just bluster." Again, that was from Abbas Mousavi writing on X. The House of Representatives today approved a war powers resolution seeking to limit Donald Trump's authority to execute the war in Iran. However, the same measure came up short in the Senate. Teresa Wierzbianska has more.
The yeas are 214, the nays are 208. The concurrent resolution is adopted, and without objection, the motion to reconsider.
The vote comes now months after the Trump administration joined Israel's military campaign against Iran. President Trump has called the military strikes, quote, an excursion.
This is with this skirmish we have with the Islamic Republic of Iran, and I call it that because, let me tell you, they're getting hit so hard.
All right, new word. He says it's a skirmish, but not a war. Not a war that has been going on since February of this year. If the country is at war, then the country is required to follow laws surrounding war. So is the White House acting outside of its constitutional authority
or not. The War Powers Resolution was introduced by Representative Pramila Jayapal, Democrat from Washington, Chair Emerita of the Congressional Progressive Caucus.
Well, my expectation is that our Republicans develop a spine, a conscience, and stand up for their constituents and for the country. This is clearly an illegal and unconstitutional war. It is costing U.S. service members' lives, 18 already, who have lost their lives. It is costing taxpayers tens of billions of dollars at minimum. It is driving up the cost of gas and groceries, and it is creating chaos, havoc, and putting innocent civilian lives at risk around the region. So this war needs to end.
Only four Republicans broke with President Trump and House GOP leadership to support the measure. Representatives Tom Barrett of Michigan, Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania, Warren Davidson of Ohio, and Thomas Massie of Kentucky.
House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says the other House Republicans are guilty of giving President Trump essentially a blank check to enact war.
Republicans have already lost control of the floor of the House of Representatives, as Democrats just demonstrated once again by successfully passing a War Powers Resolution.
Military law expert Jeffrey Korn says the Constitution reserves the power to authorize war for Congress, a principle lawmakers sought to reinforce after Vietnam through the War Powers Resolution of 1973.
And the War Powers Resolution was an effort by Congress to say to future presidents and future Congresses that there has to be affirmative authorization to go to war, with one exception: an attack on the United States, its territories, or armed forces, creating a national emergency.
Korn argues this administration has attempted to justify the conflict by characterizing, and perhaps falsely, military operations as defensive actions rather than a new aggressive war.
Did you notice they're calling them self-defense operations? The rhetoric of self-defense, we're doing self-defense strikes. That's in order to bolster the claim that this is an inherent presidential power. So the administration is trying to characterize the ongoing conflict as within the president's inherent authority as a bulwark against this resolution.
Supporters of the War Powers Resolution note that the War Powers Act generally limits unauthorized military action to 60 days. Korn says that timeline has already passed, prompting some Republicans to join Democrats in seeking to reassert congressional authority. Since the current U.S.-Iran conflict began in late February, Congress has voted on Iran War Powers measures at least 9 times, including multiple Senate votes on different joint resolutions and 3 House floor votes. Lawmakers returned to the issue after the fighting resumed post-ceasefire, and the administration continued military operations beyond the War Power Act's 60-day limit without a formal authorization from Congress. But the Trump administration maintains the campaign is both legal and necessary. Speaking to reporters this week in Manila, Secretary of State Marco Rubio defended the president's plan, arguing Iran remains unwilling to negotiate in good faith.
Iran is begging us, okay, both directly and indirectly. Let's do a deal. Let's talk. Iran is begging every day. The problem with Iran is every time they make a deal, the people that are in charge there, they either break it or they want to change it. So it looks like they're not ready to make a deal. So they're going to continue to pay a price. And every night the price gets higher and higher and higher.
Rubio also insisted military pressure is working.
Maybe in a few days they'll be ready to make a deal once they realize that this is not a winning proposition for them. And that's what the president is outlining. The idea that this is going to continue, it's not going to continue this way. The price will continue to get higher every single night until they come to their senses. Right now, apparently they haven't come to their senses. And so the president doesn't see a lot of utility in responding to their overtures at this point, because frankly, Iran is clearly not ready to make a deal, at least not one they're willing to live by.
North Bay Congressman Jared Huffman, who supported the War Powers measure, says the votes still matter, even if the resolution faces significant procedural hurdles.
You know, it would be easy to look at this and say, well, you know, it has no impact. But look, when you now have each branch of Congress saying that this is not a lawful war, that there is a military authorization of force necessary from Congress for this to proceed. That does count for something. And if nothing else, the president is going to have to ask for that when he asks for more money for this war.
Military expert Jeffrey Korn agrees, arguing the votes deprive the president of any claim that Congress has implicitly endorsed the conflict. The next step, he says, would be for lawmakers to use what he calls Congress's, quote, sledgehammer, its power to cut off funding for the war.
The resolution now heads to the Senate, where lawmakers will ultimately decide Congress's role in authorizing continued U.S. military action in Iran. All this war is, of course, going to cost. The Trump administration is pushing for a major expansion of military spending, with Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth arguing that the United States needs a larger defense budget to meet growing global threats. But some are saying the price tag will ultimately fall on American taxpayers. Economist Dean Baker, co-founder of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, estimates that the proposed increase in defense spending could cost the average American household roughly $5,000 a year. I spoke with him to discuss how he reached that figure, who would pay for the increase, and what that could mean for you and me.
You've argued that the increase in defense spending being proposed by Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth could cost the average American household roughly $5,000 more per year. Could you walk us through how you reached that number and what that means?
Yeah, so I'm comparing this to the last budget that we had under President Biden. So at that time, we're spending $864 billion on the military. So if you adjusted that for inflation, it'd be a bit over $900 billion today. So you compare the $1.5 trillion to $900 billion, the increase is $600 billion. And we have about 130 million households. It's on a ballpark. So that comes to about $4,600 per household. So yeah, I thought it was important people understand the amount of money involved, because I realize most people don't have their nose in the budget. These numbers get tossed around and they're pretty much meaningless to most people. Again, I'm not attacking people's knowledge. They have lives. They don't play with these things all the time. I unfortunately do. It's a really big amount of money, and people should at least recognize that.
Not offended at all. These are huge sums of money. They're huge, and everybody talks about wanting lower taxes and save money on taxes. But I think actually internalizing what that means is a really accurate assessment of where I know a lot of Americans are. So what does this mean? Acquiring additional defense spending would be funded through what? Higher taxes, more government borrowing, cuts to other programs? Who bears the financial burden of what they are trying to ask for?
Well, most immediately, it would be through a much larger deficit. And again, I've been around D.C. budget debates for a long time. Even Trump, in his first term, didn't seem to think we needed some huge increase in military spending. He wasn't proposing anything like this back. It wasn't ancient history. Maybe he can't remember, but the rest of us can. He didn't seem to think in his first term we needed some really huge increase in military spending. So what's changed in the world that now we have to spend 60%, more than 60% more than we did when President Biden was in office? It seems to me close to crazy.
That was the voice of Dean Baker, co-founder of the Center for Economic and Policy Research.
For Pacifica Radio KPFA, I'm Teresa Wersbianska.
And you're listening to the Pacifica Evening News on listener-sponsored KPFA in Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, and KPFK in Los Angeles. I'm Mitch Chuzarich, and I will be guest anchoring the evening news for the rest of this week and next week. I do so as this radio station is in its very important summer fun drive. I am quite honored to be able to host this news program because it's a show I have been listening to now for decades. And I've always felt it's one of the most important things that you are going to find on the radio, for the pure reason that it's just the news. In today's world, it's so hard to find just the news, just the facts, just the chronicling of what happened today, what you need to know to be an informed citizenry, to be an informed citizen. I've always felt like listening to this newscast is like reading a newspaper. And how many of us ever read an entire newspaper anymore? Most what we are able to do is perhaps see just the few front stories on a website or news that has been shared over social media. What we have lost in that process and the way we get news today is the ability to have a more general sense of what's happening in the world. We've now turned into our own sort of silos and looking at the world. But the KPFA and the Pacifica Radio Evening News still gives you a general chronicling of what has happened throughout the world, what is happening in the country, and what's happening in your own community. But the only way we can do this is with your support. And today I want to ask you to go to your phones and give us a call and make a donation which you can afford, what is according to your means, and to be as generous as you can, but we don't want you to bust the bank. Basically, make a contribution that you'll feel good about as you go upon your day, knowing that you did your part. For our listeners in the San Francisco Bay Area, and this is also true for our listeners in the Central Valley, in other words, listeners to KPFA and KFCF, the phone number you're going to call is 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-5732, and online at kpfa.org. And of course, for our friends in Southern California listening to KPFK in Los Angeles, the number you're going to call is 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735. 5735 and online at kpfk.org. We do have a challenge this hour, and so far in each of our days in this fun drive during the news, we have made our challenge barely, but we have made them, and it's helping us get along, and it actually helps morale. Now, I'm going to talk more about the morale of the news department a little bit later in the hour, but it is a boost for us when we're able to make these challenges. And we have one more again today from a friend from a name I recognize well, Daryl in Piedmont, who's putting up $1,000. It's conditional. If we can raise $1,000 between now and the top of the hour, Daryl's going to put in $1,000, and that means for us $2,000 this hour. And we're feeling good. It'll help me get up tomorrow and come back and do it again. So the number again is 1-800. This is for KPFA and KFCF listeners, 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-5732, and online at kpfa.org. And in Southern California, for KPFK in Los Angeles, 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735, and online at kpfk.org. Your donation will honor the comprehensive coverage you just heard about the war in Iran and also what's happening on Capitol Hill today. Both Lauren Schmidt and Teresa Bierzuwanska have just done that was a lot of work they had to put in today. You'll honor their work today with your contribution. President Donald Trump today appeared to add a condition to the newly signed agreement with Saudi Arabia to create a civilian nuclear program, saying the deal would require the kingdom to normalize its relations with Israel through the Abraham Accords. The expectation of the Saudis joining the accords was unexpected and almost certain to complicate any final approval. Yesterday, the United States and Saudi Arabia appeared to have reached a so-called 1-2-3 agreement that would allow Saudi Arabia to enrich uranium for a civilian nuclear energy program. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said yesterday's agreement does not include the possibility that Saudi Arabia could develop a nuclear weapon. But non-nuclear proliferation advocates warn that the agreement does set the first steps needed to develop an atomic weapon. And in the past, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman suggested his country could pursue such a weapon if Iran, its regional rival, attains a nuclear bomb itself. Getting Saudi Arabia to sign off in recognizing Israel as part of this 1-2-3 agreement would be a monumental diplomatic achievement for the Trump administration. The Saudis have previously made clear that normalizing relations with Israel would first require the establishment of a clear path for Palestinian statehood. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has rejected that idea. Saudi Arabia refused to comment today about President Trump's unexpected condition that it recognized Israel. Today at the White House, meanwhile, spokesperson Caroline Leavitt was asked about the appearance of potential hypocrisy of the agreement to allow Saudi Arabia to develop nuclear material while going to war with Iran over the pretext that Iran was using its own civilian nuclear program to develop a weapon.
Why does Saudi Arabia get a civilian nuclear deal, but Iran doesn't get a civilian nuclear deal?
Well, again, this agreement is still being worked out. It will eventually, hopefully, be finalized with the condition that the president spoke about this morning. But this agreement in particular, as it's been discussed thus far, does give priority access for American companies in the Saudi nuclear energy program, which will ultimately benefit American industry workers and supply chains. So the deal that has been discussed thus far and will continue to be discussed absolutely puts America first, and that's obviously very important to this president.
Reportedly, U.S. nuclear-related companies would stand to make billions of dollars in helping Saudi Arabia develop its nuclear program. The federal government today dropped subpoenas for journalists. Hayan Panjwani has more.
Officials are looking to acquire phone records of New York Times journalists in an effort to unmask sources. A court document says President Donald Trump's administration sought New York Times journalists' phone records and even those of some of their relatives in an attempt to unmask the confidential sources of the reporters. They'd written about Trump's Qatari-gifted Air Force One jet. The motion reveals more expansive attempts by Trump's Republican administration than previously known to compel the identity of sources. The Justice Department justifies the original subpoenas by saying reporters are not the targets. Those leaking classified information are. Hayan Panjwani, Washington.
President Donald Trump is going ahead with new double-digit tariffs on dozens of U.S. trading partners just as the clock runs out Friday on stopgap levies he imposed after a stinging defeat at the Supreme Court. The United States says it will slap taxes of 10 to 12.5% on imports from 60 countries, accounting for 99% of U.S. imports. The new tariffs will take effect just as temporary 10% worldwide tariffs expire at 12:01 a.m. on Friday. Trump had turned to those temporary levies after the Supreme Court struck down his biggest and boldest tariffs in February. Now he's tapping more durable tariffs under Section 301 of the Trade Act of 1974, which permits the president to impose import taxes and other sanctions against countries found to engage in, quote, unjustifiable, unreasonable, or discriminatory trade practices. Trump used Section 301 to impose big tariffs on China in his first term, and they survived court challenges. Trump, who argues that high tariffs will revive American manufacturing, last year overturned decades of U.S. policy that favored low tariffs. Invoking the 1977 International Emergency Economics Powers Act, he imposed double-digit tariffs on imports from almost every country on Earth, saying America's long-standing trade deficit amounted to a national emergency. But the Supreme Court ruled that the IEEPA did not authorize tariffs. The decision forced the administration to pay refunds to importers that had paid the tariffs to the tune of $81 billion. Tariffs are paid by companies in the United States that import foreign products. The importers usually try to pass along the cost by charging consumers higher prices. With Americans already frustrated by the high cost of living, the administration is taking a risk in rolling out new tariffs ahead of the November 3rd midterm elections. A 27-year-old Ecuadorian woman has been detained by immigration agents while boarding a flight from Denver to Oakland. Plainclothes officers arrested Chantel Morales Rojas on a jetway at Denver International Airport Sunday night. The incident was shared widely on social media.
ICE is here! Help us! Help us! No, don't show me in!
Back up, please. Back up, please.
No, stop!
Alicia Dansker, a Bay Area resident traveling on the same flight, witnessed the arrest. She says an unidentified man first approached Rojas at the gate and questioned her about her visa.
And we were sitting at the gate, and I went to get water, and I came back, and she just looked terrified. And she said a man had asked her if she would talk about her visa. And while we were waiting for boarding, sort of four men gathered and were just eyeing us from a little ways away and terrifying her, and honestly, us too.
Dansker says she and Rojas were allowed to board early, but after they entered the jetway, the door closed behind them and the officers moved in.
They scanned our boarding passes and they went fine, but all of a sudden an alarm went off on the Southwest computer and the Southwest agent started yelling and said, you have to come back. But then two large men sort of rushed us into the jetway and someone pushed the door closed behind us. And they said, we're going to be nice, but we have a warrant and you have to come with us.
Her friend says the agents claimed they had a warrant, but did not show it to an attorney who was traveling with them.
I didn't ever see it. Don't remember them identifying themselves at all. They were wearing Denver airport like badges. The Southwest agent told us later that they couldn't have stopped them anyway because they have badges that allow them to go through any door in the Denver airport. Like just a gang of dudes. It was very odd.
Video recorded by Dansker reportedly shows several people forcing Rojas down an exterior stairway and into a Homeland Security van parked on the tarmac. ICE says Rojas overstayed her visa and remains in custody pending removal proceedings. But her attorney, Laura Lichter, disputes that account. Lichter says Rojas entered the country legally, followed the rules, and filed an immigration application allowing her to remain in the United States while her case was pending. And Alicia Dansker corroborates her account.
Yeah, well, she came in the country on a visa as a nanny, and before that expired, she started going through the appropriate steps to stay in this country. At every point, the government knew where she was. There's been no gaps in what she's doing. She wasn't living in hiding at all. So she was just taking every single step available to her. I do know that Chantal had been given no information from the government that she was in any trouble, that she needed to be doing anything different than what she's doing, or that, you know, she was going to be deported. In fact, she had a work permit. The government told her, you know, knew where she was and that she was working. So, you know, I'm not an attorney, but like, this is wild.
Rojas works as a software developer in Oakland. She is now being held at an ICE detention facility in Aurora, Colorado. Her friend says ICE claims they are going after, quote, the worst of the worst.
Oh, I mean, that seems laughable at this point. Like, this is just the loveliest woman who has such deep ties to her community, who is always going out of her way to help people. Independent of me, I happen to hear through the network of au pairs here how devastated they are because they all love her. We love her too, everybody who's ever met her. I couldn't even imagine her raising her voice. I've never heard it. She's just one of the best of the best.
Earlier this month, video footage of two Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents tackling a man at the airport in Las Vegas drew public outrage and criticism from elected officials. An arrest at San Francisco International Airport also took place earlier this year, and video footage of a woman being arrested this week was posted by a Richmond council member, although SFO spokesperson Doug Yakel has not verified that claim. But there is seemingly a rise in ICE arrests at airports across the country.
The airport is not a safe place and that they're absolutely actively participating.
KPFA News reached out to the Department of Homeland Security for figures and information about arrests at other airports, but the agency had not responded to our inquiry as of news time. Meanwhile, the community has made a GoFundMe campaign to support Chantel's legal fight for freedom. House Republicans are attempting to sow doubt over claims of the inhumane treatment of immigrants. In a hearing about the conditions of the Delaney Hall Immigration and Customs Enforcement Detention Center, the House Oversight Subcommittee went back and forth arguing about the treatment of immigrants. KPFA's Kennedy Coelho reports.
House Republicans are accusing Democrats of creating false narratives around conditions in the Delaney Hall ICE Detention Center. Republican Jefferson Van Drew of New Jersey opened a hearing on the Oversight Subcommittee Wednesday. He accused the detained immigrants of being ungrateful for what he called excellent conditions, better than American prisons. And he accused Democrats of taking the side of immigrants over Americans. Van Drew said that the conditions can't be as bad as the detainees and their advocates claim, because if they were, they'd leave.
Everybody has the option to self-deport. They will be helped if they want to self-deport. They want to leave. It's not good. They don't like the food. They don't like the housing. They don't like the recreation. I didn't even go into, by the way, the soccer fields. I didn't go into the gym that is better than, and I, you know, I try to hit the gym every day, and I've been in a few nice gyms for many, many years. And this was up to any of them, anywhere that I've seen. So why the false narratives? Why would anybody do this?
In her opening statement, ranking member Jasmine Crockett of Texas called out Republicans for refusing to call in any actual officials involved with Delaney Hall. After the opening statements, the subcommittee heard from witnesses, including former immigration officers, not currently working at the center. Democrat Crockett says that since their last meeting on the topic, over 40 people have died, and nearly a third of those deaths occurred at centers run by GEO Group, the private detention contractor contracted to run multiple detention centers, including Delaney Hall. GEO Group has repeatedly been accused of inhumane conditions at its facilities. Crockett said the choice to not push for unannounced congressional visits, greater oversight, or having those involved testify is financial.
The chairman has not called anyone from the company to testify before this subcommittee, which is not surprising because they're pouring millions of dollars into Republican campaigns across the country. Let us play a game of follow the money, shall we? GEO Group has donated more than $1 million to Donald Trump's super PAC, nearly $1 million to Speaker Mike Johnson's super PAC, hundreds of thousands to John Thune's super PAC. So they spend millions to get Republicans elected around the country, and in return, they get federal contracts to operate detention facilities.
The hearing was a back and forth, with Republicans repeatedly calling the allegations of inhumane conditions at ICE detention centers false. Democrat Jamie Raskin of Maryland accused the Republicans of trying to control the narrative and not coming in good faith. He accused them of framing the narrative in the very title of the hearing.
The ambiguous title of today's hearing, False Narratives Surrounding Conditions at the Delaney Hall ICE Detention Center, naturally invites the question of whether the majority is seeking to debunk false narratives or entrench false narratives. One clue is that the title does not refer to facts at all. Another is that the majority has neither organized a committee visit to Delaney Hall, which we easily could have done, nor even undertaken the basic step of inviting an actual administration witness from ICE or the Department of Homeland Security to be with us here today to answer questions from members of Congress.
The debate stayed along party lines, with Republicans only speaking with the witnesses who would back up their position. Republican Jim Jordan of Ohio focused on sanctuary cities, seemingly to blame them for most immigration issues. He cited a situation in Colorado, a sanctuary state, where an immigrant was released and an ICE agent was injured while detaining him a second time. Jordan says that the immigrant was released because of his immigration status, and Jordan blamed the left for it.
Adding dumbness on top of dumbness. I mean, it's just like, that is crazy. So this is something that just has to change in the country. We talk about having safer streets and everything else for the public. This is just, it's just so, so wrong. And I think it's all part of the left's plan. Let in 10 million, as I said earlier, create sanctuary jurisdictions. Don't fund people like Mr. Murkowski, ICE agents, who go out there and enforce the law, and then have prosecutors who do their ridiculous charging and plea bargain decisions and create this unsafe environment. That is what the left wants today, and that's what they're carrying out.
The Democrats on the committee demand greater access into Delaney Hall, specifically for unannounced visits, to see what the conditions are day to day. For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy Cuello.
Bertie Hernandez is an immigrant rights activist who was formerly detained at a GEO Group-run facility. Hernandez now serves as Deportation Defense Senior Manager for the California Immigrant Youth Justice Alliance and draws on personal experience as a formerly detained transgender person to support immigrants being held at the Adelanto Detention Center. Hernandez said the allegations coming out of New Jersey are not surprising. Hernandez specifically pushed back on New Jersey Republican Representative Jefferson Van Drew's claims that the detention center is in good condition with adequate food and amenities like a gym.
They're making it sound like they get to choose like their meal options, that they're going to go and do like a weight training therapy, like all of these like different things, when the reality is that that's not true. Right. The reality of it is that for us that have lived this, right, for us that have been impacted by detention, right, the food is one of the first things that you notice. The food is one of the first things that, like, you see. I was served food in wet trays. Sometimes the food was so unedible that I literally could not stomach it. I lost 70 pounds.
Hernandez said that if conditions are this bad in California, a state with some of the nation's strongest protections for detained immigrants, it's hard to imagine what people are experiencing in New Jersey. Hernandez argued that the treatment of detainees and the lack of accountability reflect a broader pattern in the Trump administration of prioritizing private prison companies like GEO Group over the people in their custody.
They don't care what community members say because the corporations are bringing in billions in revenue, right? And these corporations are the same ones that are funding their campaigns, that gave out money for their campaigns, and now they're paying it forward, right? And I think that is very much what is happening in Delaney Hall. It is very much what is happening in the conversations that we are seeing right now on the committee hearing, right? There's this like massive narrative being shifted, right? Saying that, you know, undocumented people are being treated in this manner in very humanely, and that is not the case.
Immigrant rights activists and Democratic lawmakers continue to protest detention centers across the country, saying they hope increased public attention will improve conditions for those being held inside. And you are listening to the Pacifica Evening News. I'm your anchor for this week and next week, Mitch Jezerich, and I do come to you during a time in which we are seeking to raise funds for this program as well as for this radio station to keep bringing you the news on a nightly basis. As I indicated earlier, a familiar name that I've known and I've seen over the years before, Daryl in Piedmont, had challenged us to raise $1,000 on the condition that if we can raise outside of that an additional $1,000, Daryl's going to throw in $1,000, and that would be $2,000 for this hour, and that would be a very big deal for us. As I speak to you right now, we have raised $720 towards that $1,000 challenge. That means we are $280 away. I ask you to make a contribution that you can afford, one that is according to your means, and one that you feel good about knowing that you did your part in supporting this community radio station. For KPFA listeners and KFCF listeners, the number you call to make that donation is 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-5732, and online at kpfa.org. In Southern California, that number for KPFK in Los Angeles is 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735, and online at kpfk.org. I want to bring in to on air now KPFA's news director, Lauren Schmidt, who is responsible for putting on this news broadcast each night. And Lauren was also, though I was the one who voiced the copy about the story of Chantel Morales Rojas, the woman who lives in Oakland, I believe, who was detained by ICE agents at a Denver airport trying to come back to Oakland. It was Lauren Schmidt, who actually spoke to another passenger on that flight, Alicia Dansker, that we just aired moments ago. And I bring in Lauren now because, Lauren, talk about putting something together by the seat of your pants. And you've been putting this whole newscast together and then get this interview with Alicia Dansker, who is there. I've seen the video on social media of what happened in Denver, of this Oakland resident. I mean, and we pulled it off, but what a harrowing story.
No, absolutely. And I'll add, there's more to come. I've been actively emailing back and forth with the Department of Homeland Security requesting additional information, as Chantel, according to her attorney, was not in any violation. So we're seeking additional details from that. And also trying to get more data on this trend of airport arrests. Something we mentioned in this report, and we'll cover a little more thoroughly tomorrow, is there was an arrest yesterday at San Francisco Airport involving a Ukrainian woman. Scott Wiener, a state senator of San Francisco area, actually just released a statement during this news hour, and we'll be continuing to cover that. But this is something I think we've been seeing across the country, and I think it's also indicative of these new trends that we've been covering at KPFA and just in the media in general of ICE say, you know, they're targeting the so-called worst of the worst, but in fact, you know, going to immigration courthouses like we've seen in San Francisco, where approximately 1,000 people have been detained, people who been approved for green cards and had sponsors and, you know, putting people in detention centers and in these conditions where people say they're so horrible. Like Bertie, who we just spoke with, said they lost 70 pounds eating the food inside a GEO group facility. You know, we thought it was really important. And I think it speaks to the ethos of our newsroom that, you know, following this hearing, which I'll mention, actually had no officials from ICE or DHS present, right, as they're, you know, supposedly investigating conditions at Delaney Hall. We thought it was really important and would do due diligence to the story to actually feature someone who had that lived experience. And we first spoke with Bertie at an event with CHRLA, one of the immigration rights groups in the LA area, who has been leading the way for calling for humane immigration in the United States. Something I think is interesting, too, is that's kind of all related. And the through line, you know, is this GEO group right now. In fact, Chantel Rojas Morales Rojas is actually held at a GEO group facility in Colorado that is actually experiencing a tuberculosis outbreak. You know, so as we see that folks on the Republican side of the administration saying that, you know, these conditions are great, you'll notice they failed to mention that at least 12 detainees have gotten tuberculosis at this facility. And even California's Attorney General Rob Bonta, who's been featured on this newscast, has seen these conditions himself and released his own report, which we have highlighted, called Cruel, Inhumane, and Unacceptable in his most recent report. And for folks that don't know, all of our reporting you can actually find at kpfa.org/news. And I'll make the plug, that's at kpfa.org, is also where you can donate and support this newscast. And Mitch, it's been so great having you on board to get this sort of behind the scenes look of what it takes to make this newscast possible. You know, we were unsure that story about Chantel would even make it on the news tonight. But in the last, like at 5:45, Mitch and I sort of looked at each other and said, no, this has to air. And we were able to get it out because this is more than a job for all of us here. We are so passionate about getting news and information out to our communities. We see it as a responsibility and a duty that we take very seriously. And unlike corporate media, we are not backed by billionaires. We are backed by you. And that is why we're asking for your support. And you can lend that helping hand by calling 1-800-HEY-KPFA. That's 800-439-5732. Or by going online to kpfa.org.
I am going to step over my boundary here, my lines here, by making an executive decision to actually follow up on what you were just saying and taking the time to do that. I have worked with this radio network for many years, most of which, though not always, I was a reporter back in the day, but most of which I was a host of a program in which I'd interview one or two, you know, a few people at most, sometimes just one over a period of time. And I complained about how much work that was. But that is nothing compared to just the intense amount of work it takes to put together a newscast in which you're trying to chronicle what was going on in the world and in the community that day. Lauren, I know you won't say it, but I know your day started today at 8 a.m., right? It's almost 7 o'clock right now. Yesterday, we were both here until 7, last night as well, right? I don't know what time you got home, but I know it wasn't before then. Because I know we went out to dinner, and then you came back to the station because you had some more stuff you had to do at the station,
well,
right?
The news doesn't sleep, Mitch.
And neither does Lauren Schmidt. And I do, because I can't do it anymore. But if you were to look at this table I'm broadcasting from right now, it looks like a nuclear bomb went off. Because we just have crazy stuff everywhere. And it's an operation that's by the seat of our pants. And it is stressful. And it takes a lot of work. But it's important news. And again, I really want to – and I am so thrilled. And I have to tell you, friends, right now, we have not raised a single dollar since I told you we have raised $720 towards that $1,000 challenge. And this is a real problem right now. We need to be able to make this $1,000 challenge that came in from Daryl today. So as Lauren said, the phone number, if you're listening to KPFA and KFCF, to make a contribution is 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-5732, and online at kpfa.org. In Southern California, for KPFK, it's 818-985-5735, 818-985-5735, and online at kpfk.org. But something I really want to say here, and I've already said in part, is that it is a real honor for me to be able to guest host this week and next week the Pacifica Evening News. On one hand, and for the first reason, is because I've been a listener to this program for well over 26 years. I was trained in this program. I was trained by the late great, not her alive still, most of these folks, Mark Maracle and Eileen Alfandary, both of who are alive. I don't want to mix that up, right? But to me, these are some of the greatest journalists, broadcast journalists I've ever known. Eileen Alfandary, to me, is maybe the greatest broadcaster journalist I have met out of this network. And I include Amy Goodman, who deserves all the accolades she gets. And so I remember the Chris Brunies. I remember the Wendell Harpers. I remember the Kelia Ramirez's. We still have Max Pringle and Christopher Sprinkle around, right? It's an honor to work on this show that I think has played a huge role in our local democracy to make sure our listeners are informed of what's going on in the world. But there's another reason why it's a deep honor for me to be able to do this, is I'm really excited about what's happening with this news department right now. With the leader of Lauren Schmidt, we've got somebody, I'm not going to give your age, but Lauren Schmidt's a little bit younger compared to the rest of the crowd here at our home station KPFA, right? And Lauren, I think you have the energy and the spirit that I had many years ago, and that's exciting to be seen running the news department. I see folks like Teresa Wiersbianska, who also I think does fantastic news, and I see you two working together, and then bring in Christina Onnestad as well. I mean, these are three powerhouses that are burning the midnight oil to bring the news to the air each day. And for me to have this opportunity right now to work with the three of you here and there, it's an honor.
Thank you, Mitch.
And I'm really excited to be here.
It's been just an honor also to work with you. And, you know, in so many other media organizations, it takes entire departments, like dozens of producers, editors, reporters, engineers, digital teams, assignment desks. But here at KPFA, it really is this small team. And every morning headline, field report, breaking news update, hour-long nightly newscast is all produced by real people working long hours because we believe independent journalism matters.
And you oversee the young interns who all work here that we featured yesterday.
Yes. Yes, we do. In fact, if we have time, I have a short pitch from Lily.
Hi, I'm Lily Owen, KPFA Youth Works intern. I'm 15 years old, and this is my first job. These past few weeks have been great experience. I've learned so much more about what real, unfiltered, quality news looks like and how to create it. That's why it's important for listeners who want real news to support this radio station. Donate what you can and give us a call. For KPFA listeners, the phone number is 1-800-439-5732. Again, 1-800-439-5732. Or go online at kpfa.org. Thank you for your time. For
if
KPFA,
you don't already know about
Owen.
It, it's really time
Lily
to
Owen,
discover
another one of our young interns here. Friends, we're down to our...
KPFK is community radio from Southern California, powered by people like yourself for over six decades now. It's part of the completely unique Pacifica Network, and our listeners and sponsors are passionate. We've routinely heard them say things like,
"It is the best source of news that I know of."